Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 63 of the Mom Hour. I'm Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Megan. How are you?
I'm great. Kind of excited about this topic. After we did the last episode, which was things we wish we wouldn't have freaked out about the school years, I believe we called it.
Yeah, starting school.
Starting school. I got at least one comment, maybe more than that, saying they wish that we had talked more about older kids.
Yes.
And since your kids aren't older, I guess it just didn't really occur to us. But then we kind of thought it'd be fun to do an episode where Sarah kind of grills me about the, you know, the down and dirty facts of raising middle schoolers. And it doesn't have to be about school itself.
Right.
But just a lot of stuff starts, like, their bodies change and things become a little more intense. So I hope Sarah has a whole list of questions. And I
know, you know, things Sarah might freak out about in a couple of years. That would take way longer than 45 minutes, obviously. Yeah.
And I want to also say that because I'm still so thickly in it and two of my kids, you know, were only middle schoolers a few years ago, I'm not totally out of the freaking out phase, but I'm getting there. You know, I haven't seen it all play out yet with all of them enough to be like, whew.
I love that. I'm sure we'll get into this too, but your very bestie in the whole world is a middle school teacher too.
Yes.
And I love having that. I love having teacher friends or like people who are on the inside of a world I know nothing about. So,
and she actually loves middle schoolers.
Well, I feel like middle school teachers do. That's because they're drawn to it.
They have to.
So, well, I'm sure we'll be mentioning Jenna's name a few times.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to pick your brain. So I wanted to mention before we get going that we still have a giveaway going that we talked about last week. And this giveaway is geared toward you mamas of littler ones, toddlers and preschoolers. So if you haven't caught last week's episode, go listen because it'll be worth your time. It's a great giveaway. And if you listen and just forgot to enter, you have until Wednesday, August 10th at midnight. So if you're catching this one right as it comes out, you've got a day or so to enter. And all the details are at themomhour.com and look for episode 62. That's last week's, just to catch up. Don't want people to miss that opportunity if they meant to, because it's a really good one. It was a fun episode. So. Should we do our regular segment before we launch into middle schoolers?
Yeah.
I don't know what's been going on with you lately. Our summer recording. First of all, pause. Let's give ourselves a big high five for not missing.
No kidding. We haven't missed a week at all.
Summer.
And we've been both on vacation.
Yeah.
I was gone for 2 full weeks.
I don't know how we did it actually.
I look back and I'm just amazed at us. We're awesome.
I know. We've been kind of light on the social media and promoting our podcast, so people may have forgotten that we exist.
But we did check out a little bit, but that's okay. We've been recording, so great. Good for us.
Yeah, so what you guys haven't traveled for a couple weeks now, right?
Not really. I went to Chicago for some work and, you know, hung out with some people and did fun stuff like that, but we haven't been on a trip. And
so
we
won't. Just in a normal.
Yeah, routine, that's why it seems like nothing's routine. Happening. It seems like nothing's happening because we're not going anywhere. We're not packing. We're not doing anything. So we're just, you know, getting caught up on stuff. So
are the kids doing summer camp still?
No. Let's see. Isaac has cross country camp, and then he's actually going to a Second City comedy camp in Chicago.
Oh, that's awesome.
At the end of the summer, which I'm really excited about, and can't wait to talk about that when he gets back. The other kids are just kind of doing, you know, like football camps and stuff like that. Owen and Will are both playing football this year, so they're kind of gearing up for that. And that's kind of it. It's just been really relaxing, which is nice. We need it. And the next time we travel will be the end of the summer.
Okay.
The very last week of summer.
This is my end of the summer. We're entering that weird time of year where half the people are back and others are like, you know.
We're not even close. We still have close to a month. So
okay. And what is this aerial yoga photograph that I feel like you've posted this once before, but I never actually heard you talk about it.
So I had some. So basically, what it is, and it's so funny. I saw the Michael Jackson One show. It's a Cirque du Soleil show in Vegas last year, and I had never had any interest in Cirque du Soleil. My friend calls it Cirque du Soleil. I was kind of thinking it was going to be kind of really cheesy and new agey and dumb.
Right.
I don't know what I was thinking. I like aerial, you know, acrobatics and all that stuff. So anyway, It was this Michael Jackson tribute show that has all this dancing and circus performance, and it was amazing. And there was this woman who did, you know, did the thing with the silks. So she went all the way to the top, and it was like, really high in the air. And then she like rolled her body all the way down it. And I was like, oh my gosh, if I could like go back in time and have a different career than the one and also be in much better shape than I am, I would totally do that. Well, at the same time, this yoga teacher that I know who taught yoga classes that I went to, that she used to be at my current gym, now she's at a different gym, posted on Facebook that she was teaching aerial yoga. And the silks are the same, but they're like in a hammock. So you basically, you use the silk thing that's like bolted to the ceiling and suspended to support you in different poses. So it doesn't, you don't have to go upside down. I mean, you can use it just to get a better stretch. You can use it to get like your down, like your hips up in a down dog or something.
Right.
But you can also go upside down. And we did like a whole bunch of, you know, like you kind of sit in it and then flip back and your legs are wrapped around it. As long as you keep your legs spread out, you can't fall out because your legs stop you.
Right.
And it's really, really, really fun. It's hard.
Is it hard? Yeah. I was going to ask if it's like hard physically.
Well, it's slower moving, especially because it was a beginner class. So I had taken the class from her, you know, back in April or March or something like that on my own in the class that she already had. And then this time I got a group of friends together and we just paid her like a private fee to just put a class together for us. Yeah. So it was all people we knew, but she moved the class pretty slow because I was the only one who'd ever done it and I'd only done it one time. So it was easier than regular yoga in that it didn't just keep moving really, you know.
Yeah.
There was never that moment where I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to fall down on the mat. Right. But the getting in and out of the poses is harder and like much deeper stretch. So I was sweating. I mean, it was hard.
Yeah.
It just wasn't like super active aerobic type hard. It was just difficult, but fun. And not as hard as you think. Like you see those poses and you're like, there's no way. And it's not that hard to get into them. And we were all different body shapes and different levels of fitness. And everybody was able to do everything.
Well, I think it looks really cool. Listeners, if you're not following Megan on Instagram, she's Megan Francis, M-E-A-G-A-N Francis. And there is an aerial yoga photograph from recently in your stream. That sounds really cool.
So how about you? You've been traveling.
Oh, yeah.
Your last travels of the summer, huh?
So we, as of this recording, I got home like an hour and a half ago from our last trip. So this summer ended up kind of funny. It was two big trips. And both the big trips, we got home and turned almost right around for a quick trip up to my parents in Santa Barbara, which in theory is an easy 3-hour drive. It's not a big deal. It just so happened that both times we went up there, it was a day to a few days after a bigger trip. So we're like, the suitcase is barely unpacked. Maybe that's okay. You just leave stuff in there. So it kind of made it just like extended those other longer trips. So I guess, so 2 weeks ago we were in Rhode Island, which was great. I can't even remember if I mentioned that on last week's show, but it was a beautiful New England beachy week, very different from where I live. And it's a really pretty part of the country and I love it, but it's a long way to go. And then we were home for a few days and went up to Santa Barbara this past weekend. So yeah, we start school 1 week next Monday, the 15th. So a week from today as of this recording. And my older two kids are starting a brand new school, like it is opening on their first day of school, which is kind of exciting. It's a charter school. There have been a lot of local families who've worked really hard to get it going. I was not involved in starting the school, but I heard about it kind of shortly after it was officially, you know, underway, being developed. And yeah, there's a lot of, I think, risk in a brand new school, but there's also a lot of really excited people.
Yeah,
like the teachers are excited, the families are excited. So it will be interesting. So it feels like even more of an anticipation for a new school year because it's a school change for my older two who will be in first and third. And it's also a brand new school. So everybody, there's like a Facebook group for the parents and you can just tell everybody's a little jittery because it's everything's new.
Go ahead. I was going to say, is it a particular educational philosophy or?
Yeah, it is. It's STEM and STEAM focused. So a lot of hands-on science and technology and arts learning. And then they're taking, it is not called a Montessori school and it's not, that's not the only philosophy they're using, but they are borrowing a lot of the things I like about Montessori. My kids have all gone to Montessori for preschool and then Reed stayed for kindergarten. But they're doing mixed stage classrooms, which is one of my favorite things about Montessori. Having not, you know, it's not going to be like K through four in one classroom, but it will be K1 and 2-3, and kids having the opportunity to be either the older or the younger, whichever is a better fit for them. And to kind of learn, I don't know, learn at their own pace is such a cliched phrase, because you can do that in a lot of different ways, but not teaching 32 first graders the exact same math concept, right, for example, being able to differentiate a little bit on either end, depending on what they need. So there's a lot of things I'm really, I'm really excited about. But again, there's going to be growing pains at like any new business or any new, so it's a little bit.
We all know Sarah likes to know exactly what to expect.
So you do? No, yes, it's a leap of faith. Oh, and it does go through eighth grade. That's, since we're going to talk about middle school today, that's one thing. Moving Allegra in third would be, I think differently about it if it were just going to fifth, which our elementary schools around here, you know, stop at fifth and then middle school picks up at sixth. But this is a K-8. So, it, you know, as long as it works out and that's our school that we stay at, she will continue right on through middle school.
I always have liked that. Yes. That's uncommon around here. It was very common in Chicago. And that was the one thing I really liked about the Chicago schools is, but I feel like it's, I just like the idea of keeping kids together that long, especially because those middle school years are tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can always sort of have different things that they do and maybe like a school within the school that is the middle school. But yeah, not having to drop everything and move campuses. And
yes, exactly.
Yeah. So that was a, it seems like the privates and the charters around here are K-8, but public schools are still K-5 and then 6th, 7th, 8th and middle. So yeah.
Is that a good segue? Should we now
let's
launch our topic?
Let's go into middle school. All right. Well, do you want to just kind of start, or do you want me to start with a question?
Well, I think I'll just kind of, for anyone who might not know, I'll just kind of sum up where I'm at.
Yeah.
So I am on my third middle schooler. William is going into 7th grade. Jacob and Isaac both finished middle school several years ago.
Yeah.
And I guess, I mean, there were things about it that surprised me and things that weren't as scary as I thought they were going to be and things that were harder than I thought. Let's just, if I'm going to sum it all up, and you can ask me specific questions or, you know, I'm sure there are things I'll think of while we're talking that I'll want to jump in on. But like, what are your burning middle school questions?
Well, I guess
probably also say that we may wander into topics that aren't as G-rated.
Yeah, a little kid-friendly.
Yeah, just a warning. I mean, I'm going to keep it clean, but there's, you know, human bodies involved here. So there could be some sensitive talk.
There are changing human bodies involved.
Exactly. Exactly.
Actually, that was not the first thing that popped into my mind, but I want to get to that. The first thing that I think, the very first thing that popped to my mind when we started talking about this was going from a small pond to a big pond. And that was my experience personally in middle school. And I don't know how your schools work, but we had a lot of elementary schools public feeding into, in our whole city, there were 3 junior highs, but the one I went to was the biggest. So, I mean, the difference in the size of my class and my classrooms and my overall school from elementary to junior high was, I don't know, a factor of 10. Like, I mean, really a big difference. And just that feeling of going from being the top of the elementary school and everybody knowing you to being a very small fish in a very big pond. So maybe I guess my first question is, how did your boys, is that something that even seemed to be an issue for them? Or
well, I will, okay, so our school only feeds in only three elementaries feed in, so it's 3 times as big.
Okay.
I will say they do a really good job at this school of keeping the 6th graders kind of separate. So
sixth graders are the first year of
year of middle school. And the school just seems to do a really good job of kind of sheltering them a little bit from the bigger kids. And they have their own hallway and they have their own lunchtime. It's like, so they, it's not like suddenly they're just dumped into this enormous school.
That's great.
Where now they have to grapple with the 8th graders who are huge compared to them. Yeah. I mean, 6th graders still look like children, little guys. Yeah. And, you know, the 8th graders look like ready for high school. So that wasn't really the biggest issue. What was interesting here, you know, I'm in one small town that has one school district,
right,
and 3 elementary schools. And even though we are tend to be a pretty homogenous from the outside, it's like maybe 11,000 people in our city, not super diverse in any way. there is, each school does have its own flavor. So we are downtown, and our school is the one that, if there were one that were more diverse, this would be it. Okay. You know, it's in town. It encompasses like a more diversity of housing types. Right. Pretty much all the rentals are down here. So it's just, it's a little bit different.
Right.
And then there's the school that's kind of out by where the housing developments are. And that tends to be a more affluent community of kids. And then there's like the country school. I mean, it sounds so corny to say that, but it just kind of is. It's like just this little bit more of like a country school. Right. And so what I think is interesting and cool is then like you're with not just with more kids, but you're with different kinds of kids.
Yes.
And all the kids are coming in with different, you know, this is when like sports really starts to get big and stuff. So like kids are coming in with, I guess, higher expectations. And it starts to become more apparent like whose parents are paying a lot more for things like lessons and opportunities and have the resources to do that. And so it can start to feel like you start to feel those differences a little bit more. At least I do as a parent. And I think now, you know, this is when William will say things like, oh, can we live in X housing area? Or, hey, mom, are we going to get a boat? Stuff like that. And I'm like, well, you know, we'll talk about it. It hasn't really been a big issue. The other thing that's been interesting with my kids is they've all kept the same friends. They've all added new friends, but they've really hung on to the friends they made in elementary school. I think that that was maybe comforting for them. So like them having those little three or four solid friendships helped them a lot in middle school. And that seems to be the case with William as well.
Okay.
So yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. And I think remembering too that it may be a bigger school, but yeah, having those smaller relationships, and they're still going to have, you know, relationships with their teachers. And like you said, sixth grade, I think that's nice that sixth grade stays.
And I've heard that that's pretty common these days. I think that middle schools, that's probably why they do middle schools instead of junior highs now. I mean, junior highs have really kind of fallen out of favor, it seems. And I went to a junior high and that was a really shocking change going from sixth grade to seventh and just kind of being dumped in. Too. That was rough. So
Exactly. So what about academically? Like, I mean, do your kids go right from like true elementary, like one teacher for one, you know, for their whole experience to switching classes right away? And how do they do that?
I will say like some of my kids, I feel like the elementary was dabbling with team teaching for a while. So maybe they'd have like a different teacher for math and science, but then they'd be with the one. But mostly it was your traditional in the same class with the same teacher all year round, all year long, and then going to a middle school where, they have five or six different teachers. Again, I think in sixth grade, that's like a really nice, and this is all just my experience. I can't speak for anyone else's school district.
Right.
But for us, it was kind of a nice transitional year. Like they babied the kids a little bit.
Yeah.
For both of my older boys and, you know, I'm expecting for William too, seventh grade is where stuff gets real.
Okay.
And I've even, you know, Jenna has told me many times, like, she feels sorry for the seventh graders because they have this look like deer in the headlights, but there's not, it's kind of like they have to get it because you can't just kind of baby them all the way up till eighth grade.
Right.
They have to deal with the new expectations and no one saying, you know, no, like the teacher's not going to remind them if they didn't turn something in, they just won't get credit.
Right.
Or the teacher's not going to kind of coddle them through an assignment the way they would in, you know, fifth grade or sixth grade. So that has been a bit of a transition. You know, William last year struggled a little bit because I think I've talked about the fact that he's the kid who does exactly what's expected of him and no more.
No more, no less.
No more, no less, right? But I think because he just kind of was expecting it to be a little easier than it was, his just pulling, like just kind of phoning it in didn't really work. And because he wasn't doing any extra credit or really, you know, so much as participation, we talked about this last week too, he just wasn't really putting himself out there. And so I think he's now kind of, the good thing about him is he realizes pretty quickly what he needs to do. And he's pretty diligent about just doing that. Just that thing. Just that one little thing. No more. I'm interested to see how it's going to go.
How do you think, I mean, obviously there's a huge difference in parent-teacher communication and the expectation that kids are, you know, for the most part, advocating for themselves.
Yeah.
Have your kids sort of naturally progress to that, or what can parents expect about parent teacher communication in middle school and junior high?
It really depends so much on the teacher. So like in our school, they have My Big Campus, but I'm not sure that we're using that anymore. I feel like maybe they were going onto some new platform.
Okay.
I am terrible about checking in with those because not so I'm not even sure I'm using it right, frankly, but I think each kid, depending on what school you're in, you have like a different login. Okay. So the high schoolers had one, and like then the middle schoolers had one, and I just, it's not all in one place, and I have a very hard time like keeping track of all the stuff my kids are supposed to be doing, and I kind of feel like at some point I shouldn't be doing that anyway. Yeah. But I do, but there is something to just, even if I don't really even know what they're supposed to be doing, just something mm-hmm. to me saying, hey, get your stuff out. And I'm just going to stand here and like kind of watch you do that part
right.
and act like I know.
Yeah.
They seem to buckle down and take it a little more seriously. Some of the teachers like text all the time. You can sign up for text alerts and email okay. alerts and stuff like that. And some just don't. So okay. I haven't really found an across the board philosophy about that.
Well, and I think for different parents, like you, I think are the type of parent to more stand back. And unless there's yeah. a major issue or your kid is asking for your help, you're going to let them develop that relationship. Exactly. I think probably for parents who have, for various reasons, needed to be more in touch with teachers at the elementary level, it would be kind of an interesting transition. Yeah. As we're talking, I'm thinking about the book that I've mentioned now twice in two different episodes by Jessica Leahy, The Gift of Failure, because she is a middle school teacher or junior high teacher. And so a lot of the meat of that book deals with, you know, encouraging autonomy and independence in this exact age group.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
you know, she went so far as to really suggest that parents who can log in and look at grades, that they just don't, or that they mm-hmm. ask their child's, you know, that they work it out with their kid of like, hey, how often would you like me to check your grades?
Right.
Or how about I just ask you? And then if there's some confusion, we'll look together. But
right.
that you don't play the role of spy, you know,
that,
or you're checking
and
in and then, you know, then you're going to them armed with this information rather than going to them in the first place, I guess.
And it doesn't give you, it often doesn't give you a really accurate view either, because if the teacher hasn't updated it, or if they enter some stuff in and not all of it, or
right.
if the kid is going to have a chance to like take a test again, it can look wild. Like what's in that grade book can be wildly different from like
right.
reality. So
right.
I've used it to check in on my kids who I think just are really not doing what they need to be doing.
Uh-huh.
But I don't, like for William, I don't check on it.
Right.
He'll be fine. Like I'm not worried about it. The times that his grades have not been great. At some point, like if it's becoming troublesome, a teacher will check in and say, this
right.
is what's going on.
Right.
And then we have a chance to correct course without me, you know, checking every single night and obsessing over this test or like that homework score or whatever. So it's working for, but again, it's so like your miles may vary because
yeah,
it depends so much on the kid and the teachers and your personal comfort level
right.
with letting
right.
that go so much. So,
and have you had to like do anything proactive or like, I guess, consciously to give your boys, like to let them know that it is their job to be in charge of their assignments or to talk to their teacher? Or does that come down at the school level?
I think that's
pretty clearly.
That's come down pretty clearly at the school level. I think the
that's
teachers
good.
Are pretty good about explaining to the kids what the expectations are. That doesn't mean the kids get it right away. I think
right.
there's still sort of that shock, like that little culture shock. Like, wait, oh, you know, no one gave me a chance to make this right or whatever.
Right.
But that's kind of why that cushion is built in, I think. So, you know,
yeah,
these
and
grades
I think,
aren't going on the permanent records.
Right.
Yeah.
And hopefully, I mean, again, from Jess Leahy's book and just other things that I've read, hopefully teachers are making like those skill sets really
yeah.
as important a part of the curriculum as anything else. I mean, I know a lot of middle schoolers get like a planner, you know, something
yeah.
to write down their assignments in, and then they teach them, you know, how to plan out a project or
right.
how to manage their assignments.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
Think.
Sure one thing I didn't really anticipate, and this is true in middle school and in high school, was that, see, I remember, I mean, I don't remember which kid it was now, but I remember like that coming down to one of my kids either getting into this harder math class or just kind of going with the regular class. And I was really torn, and I think we ended up just pushing him into the regular class because he was struggling a little bit and it just felt like I didn't want to stress him out. Well, what I didn't really think about at the time is that it's not just about the difficulty of the class, but sometimes like who else is in the class.
Mm-hmm.
So often what ends up happening is the lower classes have kids who just aren't really trying as hard
right.
in them,
right.
unless they're truly remedial and the kids are really getting special help. Often
right.
it's just kind of those middling classes are the class clowns. I know, cause
yeah.
I was a class clown.
Yeah.
And so if you have a kid who's particularly distractible
yeah.
or kind of like can be easily influenced by what's
right.
going on around them, it may be better to put them in the harder class and see how they rise to the occasion
mm-hmm.
and see if like the peer pressure kind of
right.
helps them
right.
try to like, you know, get a leg up and maybe become friends with the more studious kids.
Right.
And then again, that totally depends on the kid. So I probably could have done better with harder classes myself when I was younger, because I think it would have made me kind of, you know, try a little harder to stay, to keep up.
It's so much choice involved too. I'm thinking from as you transition from the elementary school, I'm trying to remember how, since I don't have a middle school kid, how that worked when I was going into junior high. I mean, there were, we called them GATE, which was in California, it's gifted and talented education, but whatever, it's like the advanced classes. But I don't really remember like how you, I think we tested in elementary school, but I still don't remember having like how we made our choices or if our parents made the, I really have no.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, I think a lot of it is due to, is just decided for the kid. Like, I don't remember us having a ton of choice, especially not in sixth grade. I don't, I think the only thing we could choose in sixth grade was like band or choir or gym. Like those were your, you could choose between those three things. Everything else you either tested or the teacher recommended you for a certain thing. Right. I honestly, in my, you know, my remark about the math class, I can't even remember if that was middle or high school. That could have been high school, because at high school you have lots more choices.
Right. And yes, that's kind of what I was thinking too.
In seventh grade, you have more than you did in sixth. And in eighth grade, interestingly, is where for us, some of those choices or else where you land started to affect high school, which I feel like was maybe not explained. I didn't get the memo on that one. That like the math class my eighth grader was in would affect what class he could go into in ninth grade, which would affect how far he could get. Which in Michigan, you have to do 4 years of math. So I actually didn't want them to start as high as possible because then you are, you know, you got to do like calculus. And I don't believe that everybody should do calculus. I mean,
me neither.
So I especially believe that I should not do calculus. But so that's just something like I think sometimes there's something to taking it day by day and being like, I can only worry about what's right in front of me. But I kind of wish I had like really understood that seventh grade is leading to eighth, which is leading to ninth. And it's part of this big picture that I could have maybe made it easier on myself if with a little more foresight, I guess.
Right.
Easier on the kids. So that was one thing. You know what I have to say about school? The one of the hardest things or the biggest culture shock kind of things for me was going to school conferences. You know, you go to your elementary school teacher conferences and it's like 15 minutes of them talking about your kid and how special your kid is. And this is totally, remember last week when I said, I just wanted to hear how special my kid is. But elementary school can be such, especially if your child isn't really having any particular issues.
Right.
And they're just, you know, they're kind of getting along and everything's going fine. It just becomes like the warm fuzzies. You know, it's just this like, let's talk about your human and let's talk about his great personality and let's talk about his academic prowess or whatever it is your kid's good at. I feel like elementary school teachers work really hard to highlight that.
Yeah.
And then you go to middle school, and how it is at our middle school is, and I think this is pretty common, you don't really make an appointment. You just show up and you stand in line.
Oh, wow.
To whatever teacher you want to go to. So like they're all over the place and you just choose. You don't have to go see them all. You don't have to go at all if you don't want to.
Okay.
And then you get in that line and you go up and you have like 4 minutes with that teacher who is managing so many more kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Like 100, even, I think like 100 or 150 is like pretty standard. Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know, in October or whenever the first conference is, they don't even necessarily know your kid very well yet. They may not know your kid's name. I mean, they may not be able to maybe pick them out in a lineup. So it's very mechanical. It's like, oh, you know, so-and-so, Bob Smith, looks like he didn't complete this homework. I'm like, oh, well, I could have found that out myself just looking at. And then they tend to kind of go back over whatever the policy is. If there's something you need to know about like, oh, well, Tuesdays are when we study for tests, so you should know that. And then it's like, thank you. And then you leave. And I remember like walking out of my first middle school parent-teacher conference just feeling like, so depressed, not depressed, just deflated. I was like deflated, like, oh. And then I had to go to an elementary school one just to, just to give me another boost. So that's something to keep in mind. Just
I want to say that when I was in junior high, there were no conferences. I think there was a back to school night, but it was a traditional back to school night where the parents went and they went through your day's worth of classes in the order that you would go through them, like a mock day. And so they sat down for 10 minutes in each class or whatever and listen.
Yeah, we do that too. And that is a useful way to know what your kid's dealing with. So I like going to those. Like they're kind of fun, but.
Well, I don't want to forget to talk about Jenna's perspective as a teacher. Is there anything you've learned from, because I feel like we're going to veer off from here, but is there anything from you've learned from having your best friend be a middle school teacher about like, what's her inside scoop? She likes middle schoolers, you said.
Why okay, let me say this. Here's one thing I will say. I always thought I didn't like middle schoolers. But then when I had them, I realized I really do like them. And I think I would maybe even like teaching them if I were a teacher. I think what I, when I think of middle schoolers, I think of when I was a middle schooler.
Yes.
Around other middle schoolers. And yes. I thought they stunk then because I was awkward.
And you kind of felt like yourself insecure. Stunk, kind of,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I was just, ugh, I was no good. I was just, I felt awkward and insecure. I felt like everyone was mean. I mean, whether or not that's even true is, you know, so I think Jenna's really good because she really sees the positive in like all kids. So she's one of those teachers everyone loves because, yeah. you know, they really do feel special in her class. But she really genuinely, you know, really, and she doesn't, she doesn't sweat stuff that doesn't really matter. She right. isn't all caught up about stuff that isn't a big deal. She's just,
she knows
her goal.
Just be goofball some yeah, of the time.
Exactly. And sure, that's, I think that's what she likes yeah. about yeah. eighth graders in particular is they're still goofy.
Yeah.
They don't think they're super cool yet. So she yeah. can tell a bad joke and they'll laugh. They like yeah. her. They bring her stuff. I mean, they just, they're not yet to the point where they think they need, they have something to prove.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they'll be excited if they see her out in public. Whereas yeah. then if she sees them a few right. years later and they're in high school, they might not say yeah. hello. So I think it's part of it. They're just, you know, they're kind of like these big goofballs. You know,
well,
so.
It's funny. I don't know if this is a good comparison because, again, I'm not there yet. But I feel like I felt the same way about toddlers. Mm-hmm. When you don't, like when you have a really cute baby that you can keep their face clean all the time and they don't, you know, embarrass you in public. Like toddlers just seem really foreign and horrible to me. And then now toddler parenting is really, really hard.
Yeah.
But toddlers themselves, when they're yours, are really kind of fascinating.
Oh, they're delightful
creatures.
Yes.
And they bring a lot of stress, but they also are stinking cute. So right. I can see how it would be a little bit of the same when viewed from the outside, you're like, ah, the boil and the pimples and like yes. the back talk. But when it's, you know, when you're in it, they're still cool humans.
Is absolutely.
Lots yep. to bring. That's interesting. Well, let's talk about awkwardness. Let's
yes.
go there. Okay. This is funny because you and I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but coincidentally, we privately shared with each other our seventh grade school photos a few days ago.
Oh my gosh. You need to put those in the...
I will. So,
yours okay. is a lot better than mine. I have that to say, but...
Well, I don't think it's better. I think it's a more quality photograph because yours was like from a yearbook.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't think so. This is what's so funny about mine. This is a perfect example of like pre-puberty to puberty physical transitions that like the child has no idea are even happening. My sixth grade photo, I have this hair that's straight and it was like toward the end of the bangs that like the swoopy to the side bangs kind
oh,
of
yeah.
like the,
mm-hmm.
you know, And actually they look kind of cute and I have this headband on and I look like a kid. I have like, you know, these like cheeks and then the next year, which is like 12 months later, my hair, now I don't have super curly hair now, but I would say it's like mild to moderately curly if I don't blow dry it. And so that had just started to happen because I had straight hair until puberty. So in my seventh grade picture, I had pulled it half back. The bangs were gone. And then I had pulled it like half up. But then there's this frizz on the side that sticks out like inches off the sides of my temples.
Yep.
And then the part that's hanging down is no longer straight. It's like got these weird, kinky
yep.
waves. And it's just so, like, I did not know I had curly hair probably for a few more years. Like, I didn't get it. And that's just one little physical change that, like, times that by 1,000 that middle schoolers are going through. I guess if I have a question is, I would feel like as a parent, you kind of want to, like, protect them from being awkward or from the
right.
experience of feeling awkward. And you just can't,
no,
right?
You can't. And
so
from,
how do you deal with that as a mom?
So,
maybe?
Well, let me talk about my picture really quick,
okay.
Sarah, because...
No, answer my question. No,
I will. My hair is also, mine is my seventh grade picture. And my hair is half pulled back.
Yeah.
That morning, I was really working hard to master bang curling because you know, this was 89, I guess.
Yeah. 88,
89. And it was... The thing was, you curl your bangs, like you put like, and I can remember very specifically, you kind of break them into like four sections and then you put a curl in each section and then you fluff it.
Mm-hmm.
And with a little bit of ratting, because it wasn't really like the huge hair wasn't really out yet. We weren't quite there yet. I think that was more like early 90s almost. It kind of depends where you live too. But
yeah,
anyway, this was more the poof.
Too.
This
yeah.
was more just like that puff, right? Like
yes.
a poodle puff. And I worked so hard to get it, and I just couldn't. And I was convinced I was unpopular because I could not get my hair to do that. I think I was actually unpopular for a lot of reasons that may have had something to do with my hair. But I finally had gotten it down. I had finally figured out how to make my hair do that. And I was so excited. And then I was walking to the bus, and it was like sleeting. And So what ended up happening was the fluff just all matted down, and I didn't even have the wherewithal to, I guess, go to the bathroom and fix it. I don't know. It looked like I just stumbled in out of the rain. The picture looks, I look like a wet dog. So that picture just, it's so perfect. It is just so perfect. It perfectly summarizes how awkward I was. And I guess to answer your question, first of all, I think my mom probably would have looked at me and thought I looked cute. She probably wouldn't even have understood.
Yeah.
The fact that I was wearing out of style clothing, I couldn't do my hair right. I just don't think she would thought of me yet in that way or something. So I'm not even sure that it would have occurred to her that anything was amiss or I needed help with that.
Right.
And then, you know, there isn't any way. Like, you can help a kid do their hair, but they're still going to feel weird about themselves. I mean, I guess that I wish it would have been nice. I think that's something I'll be a little more forward thinking about. Like, oh, you might want to brush your hair. And I am a little weird about, like, I let my kids kind of do their own thing as far as hairstyles and stuff go. But there does come a point where I'm like, you got to do something. You look like a shaggy dog. You got to, let's go get you a trim.
Right.
So I guess this doesn't really answer your question, though.
Well, I guess, yeah, no, but like, as you see the changes happening, whether it's like acne or like weight, like getting big and gangly all of a sudden, or weight gain, like, I would think that you'd have to set aside your own ego and like, your kid's going to look awkward, but so is everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just sort of very gently be there for if they kind of want to do something appearance wise, or if they need something to take care of their skin, or if they want a new hairstyle.
Yeah.
But that's got to be a balance that you'd have to learn, I would guess.
Well, my boys all share a bathroom upstairs, and I just have like acne medicine and stuff just on the counter that they can all use. I never really made a big deal about it. It's just out. And the other things that I do remind them about showering and deodorant because they don't always smell themselves.
Yeah.
And I will be not brutal, but I find that they just know me, and they're going to know if I try to be like super sensitive, like, honey, it's time that we sat down and talked about personal hygiene. Right. If I'll just walk in the room and be like, someone smells, you all need showers. Like, I'll be very direct about that because I think it doesn't really do any good to beat around the bush about that, especially because I have to say it a lot.
Right.
I have to give them a lot of reminders, especially in the summer, because they're not on that routine now where they're showering in the morning every morning. It's like they sometimes let it go, and I'll say, hair needs washing.
Yeah.
Do that now. For a while, they were all just washing their hair with conditioner because I guess they didn't bother to read the bottles.
Oh.
Like, we didn't know. And I was like, it says it like right on the bottle. But so their hair, all of them look, it took me like a week to figure it out, but I was like, why does everyone look terrible? Like, everyone's hair is all, it's like all limp and greasy. And they're like, oh yeah, I went to ask you. What is this stuff? Like, that's conditioner. That doesn't even clean it. So I don't know. Yeah. I find that a mix of like gentle, but realistic and kind of funny.
Yeah. And works. Probably like lower key comments more often rather than, like you said, saving up for some big, awkward, embarrassing talk.
Yeah. And I'm not like, you all are terrible. Like, you stink and no girls will ever want to date you. And, you know, it's not like that. Like, it's just like, hey, shower.
Right.
Here's some soap.
Do you feel like there has been any self-consciousness with regard to appearance, or do you think that that is more of a girl thing? I mean, I know it's all different, but
I think it's, I think boys don't express it as much, but I see them checking themselves out in the mirror and trying to decide if they're good looking kids. You know, I mean, it's there. It just, there's like fewer ways it manifests in boys. I think it's like, they like to have clothes that look good, but they don't really care so much about their wardrobe. They don't really, there's only so much they can do with their hair. So there's been a little vanity around that stuff. But
while I'm sure there's some tie to like peer acceptance and friendships, it's got to be a more toned down version than what girls go through. I would have to believe.
Like, I also I think also my boys are way more willing to look really goofy and unattractive even in like pictures. You know, William, you know, is I think I've mentioned before, is convinced he's going to be like an Instagram star, which I think is hilarious because everything he puts up is just like everybody else's stuff that they all put up. But in his pictures with his friends, they'll look goofy. I mean, they'll just look like kids. They look like kids messing around. I don't imagine, I can't see Clara doing that. If she had an Instagram account, which I don't think I'll let her have one because I think it would take over. Mm-hmm. I think she would just be obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. Everything would be very staged. She would make sure her hair was perfect and she's seven and we're already there, you know? Yeah. So, I do think it's a lot more pronounced with girls, and I just think with the boys, they're just a little more willing to just kind of look bad.
Right.
At least my particular boys.
Right.
So.
So, no. Okay. So my next question is sort of a big general one, but do you feel like with the increase in independence and the bigger school and the more diverse school population, do you feel like your middle schoolers were kind of all of a sudden exposed to a whole bunch of things that they, and you, I don't think, I mean, you're not overly sheltered about what your kids are exposed to, but I know when I went to junior high, I saw things that I had just not seen before. It wasn't because I was like kept in a dark closet. It was just my world got a lot bigger. And my junior high was very socioeconomically diverse with all kinds of colorful groups of people. And there was, I mean, there was like some violence in my junior high. Like there were fights. I mean, I saw fist fights for the first time. I saw, you know, kids making out in the hallway for the first time. So is that something you've tried to be proactive about or wait till it comes up, or there's nothing you can do about it really?
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. I'm sure it's happening. I don't see it. You know, like they don't talk about it with me. That's one thing about middle schoolers. I think that they quickly figure out what they want to talk to their parents about and what they don't. And in my case, they don't want to talk to me about that. And I mean, we haven't had like that. Like the teachers here are pretty good about cracking down on like hallway making out. And I haven't heard about a fight.
I was like,
no, I feel like you know, when I was in high school or middle school, there was stuff I saw too, where I was like, oh, I can't unsee that. I remember actually being in seventh grade and reading some really dirty joke that I didn't understand.
Right.
And then going around and telling that joke to like everybody, and everyone's laughing. So I was like, but I didn't understand the joke. And then later when I found out what it meant, I was totally horrified. But I mean, I guess when it comes down to like learning stuff that you didn't know before, here's one thing I will say. I think that kids talk about that stuff a lot more frankly now with more adults and just a lot earlier than they did when we were little. So by the time my kids have gotten to sixth grade, they've all had several years of sex ed. They all know about sex, whether I told them first or whether a brother told them first or they learned about it in school first. It almost doesn't really matter. They all know. And they're very open about asking me questions. Like there's never been – it's just not as awkward as I thought it was going to be. If anything, I almost wish I'd brought it up earlier in a more casual way just because then it would be out of the way. But it hasn't really been – it has not been an issue. Like it's just not been a thing. And so I wouldn't say like suddenly they come back from middle school and they're like, you know, look shell-shocked.
Right.
Like that they saw ghosts or something. It's just more like a gradual
– yeah.
Increase of awareness of certain things.
And I think if there's any encouragement there for parents of like elementary age kids, it's that there it's going to happen. Like I don't actually remember being very traumatized. I can remember, so we had, there was a lot of like fights, like big, you know, like kind of semi-dangerous fights.
I remember thinking that was awesome when that happened when I was in school.
Well, I remember thinking it was a little thrilling in school, but then there was a park across from school where you would hear that kids were going. It sounds like something out of like an after school special, but you would hear that everybody was going there right after the last bell to watch a fight. And that I remember scaring me a little bit. I think because it was off of school grounds.
It was uncontrolled.
The ones that broke out in the hallway, I also kind of, it felt like something exciting happened actually. But so I guess the point is I was, you know, I was pretty, naive's not the right word. I just hadn't been exposed to all that much of that stuff up close. But I also don't remember being traumatized by it. It was
I don't remember that either. Yeah.
Here we are.
Here we are. Yeah.
This is junior high. So I guess if you're raising a secure kid who generally feels safe, who knows that they can ask questions of adults they trust, whether it's, you know, bullying or sex or peer pressure, like worrying about the exposure is maybe not such a big deal. It's making sure that they have the tools to deal with the exposure.
Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, there's a lot of things have changed. And one of the things that unfortunately has changed is that kids are getting into stuff a lot younger than they were when we were, at least across the board, than when we were kids. You know, you hear about stuff happening on buses and kids having sex really young. My experience has been that my boys have still been pretty awkward around girls at this age. Right. It's not something I'm worried about. But I also think that the positive side is I just think all education professionals are a lot more forward thinking about that stuff now, and it's being dealt with a lot younger. And so the kids are a little more worldly, but I think they're also just more prepared, which is, I think, is a good thing.
That is actually, that's a great upside. If there's an upside, is that nobody can afford to sit on their laurels.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's not like I'm not downplaying it because I know it does happen in schools in the age of, you know, first interactions and sexual experiences has gotten a lot younger. But I just think there's also a way for them to know about it without doing it. Like there's a way for them to be knowledgeable about it without engaging in it. And there's And I think just that, like, I don't think most 12-year-old kids want to be having sex. Like I remember at 12 being very interested in it.
Yeah.
As a concept, but having no desire to have anyone touch me in any way. Like it was something I wanted to like watch movies about or like hear kind of like stories about and stuff, but I didn't want any part of it. And I think most 12-year-olds are probably the same way. So what they need is to know that they can get themselves out of a situation if they need to. And that, you know, whether it's about sex or drugs or alcohol or anything else, that's been one of the things like I've tried to teach my kids, not here, this platform is evil, don't use it, or I'm going to check up on all your technology, or what, not that I wouldn't if I felt that I had to, but more like you always can leave a situation if it doesn't feel good, because that's going to apply to everything.
Right, exactly. And or you can always call me, no matter what. You can always call me,
exactly. Yeah. And just kind of like trusting that. And, you know, like I think that that can start earlier when you let them choose their own friends. And if there's someone that they don't feel good about hanging out with, then, you know, them respect that. And that can be difficult. We've talked about a little bit about that.
Yeah.
So,
I think this is a good time to mention that I feel very strongly that the crowds of kids who are doing XYZ bad behavior, it's sometimes assumed that it's in bigger public schools or it's in schools with this kind of a population. And that if you keep your kids to a small, private, or sheltered environment that it's not going on. And I think I do have the benefit of having grown up in a kind of a strange environment where there was uber wealthy. There was very socioeconomically disadvantaged, all smushed together. Mm-hmm. And the truth is that kids will find a way to do bad stuff no matter how small and protected their school is, no matter what kind of background
they come from. It's kind of their job at that point.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, and so I do feel like there starts to be this panic about, well, I want my kids to go to a religious school because it's not going to be there, or a small school because it's not going to be there, or a really liberal school because that, you know, and I just feel like
it's everywhere.
You have to
just know your own kid.
Right? You can't outrun that.
Yeah. You have to know your own kid, but really it is everywhere. I mean, it can be elevated. I remember actually, when I was younger, my mom making comments about really wealthy schools and how those kids had access to like better drugs. I mean, so for her, that would not have been actually kind of liked the fact that we were with more rugged people, I guess, you know?
No, that was, I mean, my high school was a public high school with all different levels, but the craziest drugs were with the kids who had the most money.
Yeah,
for
sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, you're right that you can't necessarily shelter it away. I did want to mention one more thing before we wrap this topic up, because this is something I know like a lot of jokes have been made about, and a lot of people have asked me, like, what's it like raising boys, like, you know, when they get to that age? And I have to say, maybe I'm just really unobservant. I also stay out of my boys' rooms because I have no desire to know what's going on in there. But, like, what happens in their bed at night when they're alone up there, I don't know. I don't want to know. And so far, there's been no evidence, like, presented to me. They just wash their sheets every now and then.
And I
just keep my nose out of it because I don't want to know. And it doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like they're entitled to their privacy as long as their room's not disgusting and they don't have food up there with animals getting into it and stuff. They kind of work that out for themselves.
Right.
And maybe that sounds like way too hands off. I already know they know the mechanics of it.
Right.
So that's good enough for me.
Yeah. No, I think that's good.
Awkward.
You went there.
I went there, but I knew people at home were like, oh, is she gonna go there or not? So yep, I went there.
Well, you have four boys, so if anyone is qualified to go there, it's top of mind.
Yes, absolutely.
The social media, I think we are gonna wrap up in a minute, but it reminded me that two episodes ago when we picked our kids' ages out of a hat, we ended up on a pretty productive conversation about social media use and phone use for it was when you were talking about William, who's 12. Yes. So we kind of skirted around that this time, but we had a really good discussion about it in episode 61 that I'll link to in the show notes, because that it just happened that that's kind of what we talked about when we talked about 12 year olds.
Yep.
Is there anything else you want to add on that? I feel like we did a pretty good job.
No, I think we. Yeah.
Your social media philosophy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And it'll keep changing. I mean, I know things are going to be different by the time Owen and Clara are in middle school. There'll be something else to worry about, and I'm just trying to stick to the basics. myself. So no,
that's great.
Yeah.
Actually, that is a really good segue. I feel like I need to tell people how I predicted the next big social media trend in
you
my dream
did,
the other
in your
night.
Dream.
I texted Megan. And I said, I had a dream that I joined Snapchat finally. And it wasn't a bad dream. In the dream, it was like, okay, well, I'm just going to, you know, it's summertime. I have a little more time. I'm just going to play around and see if I like this Snapchat thing. And it was a pretty detailed dream about that. I woke up, I texted you that I had that dream. And then that day, I think it was later that day, Instagram rolls out stories, which if you're an Instagram user, you might have seen. I am actually really liking watching the stories. I'm kind of into it. It makes me really glad I didn't try and bother to learn Snapchat because my much younger sister and other people have said it is pretty similar, but it's right in the platform that I already happen to love and use. So I'm very curious. I might start playing around with it a little bit on the Mom Hour, on our Instagram account for the Mom Hour, which you guys can find it just at the Mom Hour. So don't laugh at me if I'm experimenting, but it's kind of fun. It's like a little window into people's lives, and I don't know why it seems a little different.
So I have to ask. I was a Snapchat failure. I've downloaded the app twice. I've tried it. I don't get it. So what I don't understand about stories is the ones that I'm seeing at the top of, you know, and if you're not familiar with that, is now you're suddenly seeing people's icons at the top of your feed. That's the stories.
In like a horizontal row of circles. Yeah. Yep.
When I'm going, maybe people just aren't doing their stories very well, but when I'm going to them, I'm only seeing one picture. So is it that just that they're not figuring it out?
Yeah, it's probably different. So you probably have access to the Mom Hours account, but I am the one who manages it more. You should hop on there because the Mom Hour, we happen to have a community of more like blogging, social media type people.
Yeah.
And so when you watch the stories of people who are, they're probably were good at Snapchat in the first place, or they're just jumping on this bandwagon. But what you can do basically is you can do images or video, and you can string together a bunch or just do one or two. I would say the good stories string together two or three like very short videos. In fact, I think the video feature caps you at like 6 seconds, but you can string a few of those together. And you swipe, this is the Snapchat thing, right? Like swiping left or right that I never bothered to learn, but you do that. So say one starts and it's not somebody you really know or you don't care. You can just swipe right and see the next one. And sometimes they're 1 second long. I like the ones that are video because they are pretty like authentic and like, you know, just remind me of like, I don't know, just like podcasting in a way.
So
like
the point is that it's a collection.
It's a collection and
it goes away.
It disappears after 24 hours. And people do use like the graphic features, like you could write with your finger. It doesn't have all the fancy filters.
I like that. That's fun.
That Snapchat does. But
they'll add that at some point, I'm sure.
And then, yeah, I'm sure they will. And then the other thing that's kind of cool is if someone wants to comment, they're actually sending you a direct reply on your story.
Oh, okay.
And you see it and you can chat back and forth with them, and that part's all private. So I follow a podcaster and blogger named Sarah Bagley, who has a show kind of like ours, conversational, and she was trying it out right away. And I just wrote to her because I'd heard that it was private, and I was like, good for you for figuring this out. And she wrote back right away. So it's kind of a fun little, like, especially if you're following people that you don't necessarily know in person, but it's more of like, you know, somebody you admire, or you can send them a little message. I don't know. I kind of like it. I'm kind of into it.
Well, I'll stop, you know, rolling my eyes and try it out then, Sarah.
Well, you can roll your eyes because I don't, who knows? But I want to say for the record that I dreamt about Snapchat and then actually
she predicted the future.
Yeah, I did. I'm the Nostradamus of social media.
And I dreamed about Blog Her, but I dreamed that there was an awards. It's the same night, I think, or maybe the next night.
Yes, it was.
I dreamed that there was an awards show and Hamilton won in every category.
Well, it probably would.
Yes, even if it had nothing to do with blogging. So
pretty awesome.
All right. Well, this has been fun. I guess we'll wrap up. And anything else we need to say before
just,
we go?
Head over to themomhour.com. If you're listening to this before Wednesday, the 10th of August, go enter that giveaway. Again, you'll enter that on last week's episode, which is 62. But all the show notes for this episode will be at episode 63 at themomhour.com.
And I would also love for us to do another episode with someone's question soon. So please send your questions to us via SpeakPipe. It's just at themomhour.com in the sidebar. It's very easy to figure out.
Yeah, we love it. So fun.
Love it, love it.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
See you next time.